Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to DragonCast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond. Hey everybody, how are you doing? Welcome to DragonCast episode 27. We've done at least 20, not even including bonus episodes, not including any of the OAs. This is our 27th episode talking about the world of Westeros. I am Jamie East.
And I'm Chris Mandel.
And together we are Jedward. How's your week been? If anyone follows Chris on Instagram, they'll know that someone was a little party animal last night.
Yeah, was indeed. I was at a BAFTA after party last night.
Does that mean that you don't get to go to the ceremony, but you have to kind of hang around waiting for everyone to arrive from the ceremony?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, correct. Wasn't at the actual BAFTAs this year, although I have been before, just at an after party with a friend of mine, my friend James, who works in the industry. He got me in at Chilton Firehouse, which is this bougie, kind of like, it's like a granny, if a granny's house was also like a club.
I always get lost when I go there.
It's so, I'd actually never been before because I don't go to Marylebone that often. Not hanging out with the, you know, the darlings of exactly. So I went for the first time. It's so hard to get your bearings in that place. But I think it's really by design. I think it's to... Because what I noticed was we got there kind of early, like 10:30, because they do start turning you away, even if you've got your name on the door. So we were like, let's just get there. And I was about to tell you before we started recording, like my friend was telling me how complicated the politics of after parties are, because a lot of celebrities kind of have to go to some, but like different studios or different managers sort of trade. So it's like, okay, if you want my client to go to this one, I want one of your clients to come to mine. And so this weird...
So what, Netflix speak to Disney and
I don't know.
Kind of
I think it is. I think it is the... Yeah, my understanding is because each of this, they have like awards, like people that work, like produce the after parties.
And yeah, well, there's a whole section of staff at every kind of studio that just purely deal with awards.
It's like managing all the trains coming in and out of Clapham Junction. You have to sort of go, okay, if you're going to come in at like midnight and you're going to leave at 2, we need to make sure there's a few buzzy people at like 11 and some people, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, it was good though, but it's really interesting because you go and you think, oh my God, like I'm just going to be like chatting to Emma Thompson and like... and stuff like that. But there's all these like rooms and like weird corridors that like normal people like me don't know. Because I don't want to be a rude guest, right? So I'm going, I don't want to be like looking through all these doors and stuff. But that's where
I would absolutely be doing that.
Yeah. A lot of people sort of head out. The other thing I want to say really quickly. So I was having, nature was calling, so I went to the toilet. Always on my best behavior in these venues, and this was a really posh,
of course,
really posh toilet, right? So I was like, eyes up front.
They're very difficult. The toilets at a Chilton Firehouse are impossible to find. They're fucking miles away from everywhere, aren't they? Yeah.
But I was at the very, very end of the row, right, minding my own business.
Are we getting a celebrity cock story? Oh my God!
No,
guys, we're getting a celebrity cock story.
No, I wish. Because I would have looked. Anyway, so I keep seeing all these people walking past me, and I'm thinking, I'm at the end of the row. Like, yeah. What is going on? Where is everyone? Like, because it's at the end of this, you know, it's like a corridor, this toilet. It's like a long corridor. So I'm finally look up, turn around, and the mirror at the end of the toilets is actually a door. And all these people are sort of filtering through, and I'm like, what the fuck? So I washed my hands, obviously, followed them. And there's this, like, smoking terrace, like a secret smoking terrace by the bogs.
Oh, wow.
All these people hanging out. And it was, I like, it was really dark. I was talking to some, like, fashion, maybe like a fashion designer. I don't know who he was.
Yeah.
And I'm going, did you just walk through here like me? I just sort of saw everyone walking along and thought I better join in. And he was like, no, I came out for a smoke. But I was going like, did you just get caught up in this as well? I didn't know where we were going. I thought there might be like... And he was like, it's the smoke. It's the thing at the firehouse. That's the thing. They call it the firehouse.
Oh, I see.
Anyway.
You were calling it Chilton.
Yeah. I was like, where's Mr. Chilton? And I like his firehouse. But it was really good fun, actually. I got home about 3:30.
Oh, my God. No wonder you were happy when I delayed this by now.
I know. But you know, I woke up this morning. I thought I did such a good job getting in, not making any noise, got into bed. Rob got up this morning and I was like... Bet he didn't even hear me come in. He went, I heard.
You pissed in the wardrobe, mate. Yeah.
Probably yelling at him or something.
You started trying to walk through a door in the mirror. with a cigarette on.
Yeah. Face planting in the bedroom. But enough about me. How are you? What's been going on?
I'm all right. Yeah, not a lot. What's been going on, really? Just lots of piloting kind of podcasts and stuff, all good. What did you think? Presumably you've not watched the BAFTAs yet, then.
No, I saw the clip of, is it Ariana DeBoss doing that awful song?
Oh, Jesus Christ. It was, look, I don't want to, I'm going to say this in advance. I'm sure some of my friends worked on the show last night, almost certainly. It was fucking dreadful. It was
the whole
really
thing.
Bad. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Just really misjudged. The whole Richard E. Grant, God love him, is a national treasure, but he should not have been presenting that. Should not have been hosting that. He was so nervous. He just kind of like all the gags were. He obviously didn't want to kind of like be edgy, or which is absolutely fine. You know, not everyone has to be Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes, but it was all a bit sycophantic and a bit kind of like he at one point he picked up a sheet of paper to read from, and, and his hand he could not. Stop his hands from shaking. It was a little bit sweet, but also you just like, this isn't what I want from my host of like the biggest film event in Britain.
Yeah, and it kind of breaks the illusion, right? Because when they're in
breaks the illusion.
Safe, filmed, pre-recorded environments, people like Richard E. Grant, and I think Alison Hammond as well, are like, they look very good at like rehearsed off-the-cuff stuff, and then you get actually
then,
live, and it's like, oh, you're actually not good at this.
Well, Alison Hammond, they created this weird backstage area for Alison Hammond. I don't know why they'd done this.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So she wasn't like co-hosting, like stood on the stage. She was just like in the green room. They'd made this like green room bit for her. But Alison Hammond's great at kind of like creating viral moments and laughing and being, all right, Bab, you know, that kind of thing. And putting her hand on Harrison Ford's knee and all that kind of stuff. And creating those off the cuff kind of like, TikTok-y moments, but they've got her there, I suspect, as like a foil to Richard E. Grant's kind of like straightness to bring the fun to it. But then they just sucked the life out of it. They gave her some questions to ask, and they were just, it's just awful. It's like, you know, they had Barry Keoghan and Kelly, what was
the name? She won, didn't she? Kelly,
his co-host, Kelly, Kerry Condon. They both won. They were both BAFTA winners, sat there. Alison Hammond's first question was, what's Colin Farrell like? And it's just like, what a shit question to ask two BAFTA winners. You know, it's like, but it was that kind of thing where it was just, and then that Ariana DeBose rap performance thing was just so awful.
I mean, and also you never know how these, you know, sometimes when you devise these ideas, you think, oh, this will work. But the thing about that rap, because that is the one thing I did watch, everyone in the audience is mortified. And the fact that you've got Cate Blanchett, who's probably quite good at looking like she's having a good time when she's having a bad time.
Yeah.
If you've caught her looking mortified and you've caught Jamie Lee Curtis and Viola Davis, just you're like, wow, this is just, you didn't expect this was going to fall so far.
The thing with that rap is, it was like, its sole purpose was to do what an opening monologue from the host should have done.
Yeah.
It should have been, that should have all been there, where he's kind of name-checking the different films, taking the little, you know, taking the piss out of a few people and all that kind of stuff. So it was purely there to fill that gap. So A, you've already made a bad choice of host if it's filling that gap. Mm. That gap should be already well filled and sanded over by now.
Yeah, exactly.
Secondly, you do a rap, they're quite difficult to follow. The words are quite difficult to follow in a rap.
Yeah.
So you've got this like 4-minute rap where she's name checking different actors and films and situations and making little side jokes. And it's like, hang on a second, I can't understand what she's saying because she's fucking rapping it over a show tune. And it, oh my God, it was.
And
just...
I think also, like, we were talking about the Brits last week, and I think we watch a lot of films and telly and stuff for our jobs, but like, I sort of feel a bit like on the back foot with when awards come round. I've not seen all the things, right? Like, I don't go to the cinema that often. So I actually don't mind if these sort of events were a little bit more down, like straight down the middle.
Yeah.
I want to be a fly on the wall, not feel like they're making it for me at the expense of the people in the room. And I think when they do stuff like that Colin Farrell question, they're trying to entertain us first and give everyone in the room a nice time second. And I actually think if you just televised a fairly like straight-laced awards ceremony, there'd be more opportunities for stuff like natural charisma to come out. But when you're sort of going, Alison is going to have to go viral at this interval and this interval and this interval, you try and create viral content, I just don't think it works. I just would love to feel... And I think this is true for a lot of people. You just want to feel a bit plugged in for a night, right? You want to go, ooh, that speech. I didn't know that the costume designer was also the person that did this. I feel more informed. And I think Barry and Kerry are so talented. And I wish, with stuff like that, you think, I just wish you'd got taken a bit more seriously.
We had two packages about the Queen.
It's like, I heard the Helen Mirren one was apparently awful.
God rest her soul and all that. But, you know, we did not need in... nearly March 2023 to dedicate a whole VT to the Queen dying, which we're VT'd out. We're Queen montaged out by now. You know, didn't need it.
And then I still see the fireworks in the shape of the Queen are like burnt into my retina still.
I know. And then having Helen Mirren being interviewed by Alison Hammond about a film role that she played 17 years ago.
Ridiculous.
Just insane. And Jerry Halliwell had more airtime than any of the winners. How is that? In what world, in what multiverse is that even acceptable? Kang wouldn't, you know, it's just fucking crazy. She does not need to be at the BAFTAs.
What were the award presenters like? Because when we talked about the Brits last week, we were saying that like some of them just felt like an AI had generated the lineup. Were they better?
Just badly scripted, you know, the whole gags. You don't need to, not every line has to have a punchline at the end of it, I think, is the
Agreed.
Thing.
Yeah.
So you have like these weird pairings up, like you say, like almost like, it's like those flip books that you get as a kid where we've got fucking Cara Delevingne on the top and we've got someone off Casualty, you know, it's right, that kind of thing. It's just weird pairings. And they all have to do these weird skits and... just fucking hell, don't do a skit. You know, skits are really difficult to do. Not many people can do a skit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Let alone people that aren't natural either actors or even that good in front of a camera. Oh, it's just fucking hell, you know.
They're
really difficult to do well. So it's not, but if you've got an inkling that you're taking a stretch with what you're doing, just don't do it. Like you say, play it straight. Keep, which I guess is what they were trying to do with Richard E. Grant. It's just like, we just want someone who loves the industry, isn't going to slag anybody off. But he was just so nervous and bad. You know, he just wasn't a great host.
It's just really interesting, though, because I think there's this weird thing. I find this sometimes with work. Like, people go, we can't take it too seriously. We have to make it for the people that aren't fluent in the thing. And it's like, honestly, I think you should have way more faith in people. There's a sincerity to, I mean, it's quite a serious work. It's a big industry. I think I don't know, for example, a lot about hair and makeup, but what I don't need is for the category to be like, you know, making jokes about wigs. It's just, do you know what? Just take it seriously. Like I kind of think, anyway, I'm sort of, I will watch bits back today, I think.
There was a great speech. The guy, your man who directed and wrote Banshees of Inisherin, the guy who's
Martin McDonagh.
He made a great speech. He thanked Film 4, who financed the film, which is why it won as a British film. As opposed, Ireland are up in arms about. And it's like, well, you know, the cast were Irish, but actually, the director, the finance, the production was all British. But he made a great speech. He thanked Film 4. He said, "Thank you, Film 4, who gave me almost zero notes throughout the whole project." And then he just said, "Which is probably why I'm here right now." I thought it was a great little swipe at kind of like meddling execs.
And I think it's that we talked about that film, Banshees of Inisherin. I thought it was a bit hard to get through. What I would say is, you know, say what you will about whether it's good or not. Like, it's an original. It's small budget, made thanks to like the grants and stuff from the British Film Council and whatever. It's so important that things like that are celebrated, because there's enough CGI, there's enough, you know, big blockbuster stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's great. It's like the little film that couldn't, in a way.
I think most of the films that won last night were kind of story-based films. You know, Top Gun didn't do much. Everything Everywhere All at Once didn't do much.
Interesting.
And they were both... And actually, the ones that did, All Quiet on the Western Front, which I haven't seen yet, which I think I'm obviously going to have to see now, is kind of story-based, quite, you know, it's a bloody earnest war film. And then Banshees of Inisherin, all kind of almost like adapted from short story kind of films, really. But well done the BAFTAs, kind of.
Well done.
Almost. Good winners, shite ceremony. Should we go to Westeros?
Let's do it.
Okay, we are, by golly gosh, we are at the end of season 4. We're well over halfway of our rewatch of Game of Thrones, which feels extraordinary, really. It doesn't feel like it's taken that long, but it's taken a few.
No.
And this is our, we broke, as you will be aware, we broke the constraints of the 3 eps per season. This is our fourth rewatch of season 4. And it was the children, and bloody hell, what an episode. A bloody episode. Before we delve into it, here's a little reminder of what went on in that jam-packed, character-laden season finale from our friends at the Previously On podcast. Back in a sec. Beyond the Wall, Jon Snow is walking alone through the corpses left after the previous episode's battle. The wildlings surround him and lead him to Mance Rayder. They drink to the memory of Ygritte, and Jon is about to kill Mance when horns sound an attack. Thousands of knights charge into the wildling camp. The cavalry is under the command of King Stannis and quickly cut down the wildling fighters. Mance Rayder surrenders to save his people, although he refuses to kneel to Stannis. Jon convinces Stannis to take Mance prisoner rather than executing him on the spot. Over in King's Landing, the maesters are prodding Sir Gregor the Mountain, who is clinging to life after being poisoned by Oberyn's spear. The rather experimental Qyburn thinks that the Mountain can be saved, sort of. Lord Tywin insists Cersei will marry Sir Loras, while Cersei insists that she will stay with her son Tommen and threatens to reveal her incest to the world. When she leaves her outraged father, she goes to Jaime to reignite that incest. Daenerys is hearing from petitioners in her throne room when a man appears with a bundle of bones. One of the dragons has killed his daughter. Daenerys can't stand to see any more dead children and leads two of her dragons into the dungeons beneath the pyramid. Crying, she attaches chains to them and leaves them in the dark. Drogon, the largest dragon, has gone AWOL. The Night's Watch burn their dead, and Tormund, who was captured, tells Jon to take Ygritte beyond the wall and burn her remains where she belonged. In the far north, Bran, Hodor, Meera and Jojen reach the giant heart tree from Jojen's visions. Undead wights spring from beneath the snow and kill Jojen. The others are saved when one of the children of the forest appears. They're a race of little magical forest dwellers long thought extinct. Throwing fireballs, she drives off the wights. Inside the cave beneath the tree, magic is keeping the wights from entering, Bran is taken to an old man who's entwined in its roots. This is the Three-Eyed Raven. Bran asks if he can make him walk again.
No, he says, but he will make him fly.
When Brienne stumbles across Arya Stark, the Hound steps between them and refuses to hand her over. In a vicious fight, Brienne throws the Hound off a cliff, but Arya escapes. Arya finds the Hound severely injured. He asks her for a quick death, but Arya leaves him to suffer alone. Before he's executed, Jaime frees Tyrion from his cell. Parting in the tunnels beneath the Red Keep, Tyrion climbs up to his father's chambers. Lying in Lord Tywin's bed is Tyrion's lover, Shae. Plot twist, she had more than one lion. She tries to stab him, but Tyrion grabs her necklace and regrettably throttles her to death. Tyrion finds Lord Tywin sitting on the toilet. Pointing a crossbow at him, they then have an intimate family discussion. When Tywin utters the word whore once too often, Tyrion shoots him, leaving him to die. In the tunnels below the castle, a panicking Varys puts Tyrion in a crate to smuggle him from the city as horns have signalled an emergency. In a port, Arya finds a ship on the way to Braavos. She only has one coin to pay with, though, the coin Jack and Hagar gave her. The captain recognises it immediately. "Valar Morghulis," says Arya. "Valar Dohaeris," says the captain. And Arya crosses the sea with her back to Westeros.
Here we go, the children. I think almost everybody was in this. I can't. Who was not in this?
Ramsay.
Principal.
No Theon.
Yeah, there was no Ramsay. There was no Ramsay, was there? That's right. There was no Theon.
No Sansa.
Correct. You're right.
But
take it back. Yeah. But there's
I sort of say this most weeks. I think this is one of the best episodes of Game of Thrones.
It was a cracker. I'd forgotten
it's so
how
good.
Much happened. Yeah.
It's so good. And it's interesting because we've not watched a season finale yet. This is our first season finale. And they're not like this normally.
No,
they're always
quite
big episode 9.
Yeah.
Pick up
almost like prologues to the season premiere, aren't they? Yeah.
There was so much going on and there were so many good set pieces, so many good moments. I think most bits could have been the final bit of the episode. Tyrion killing his dad could have been one. Obviously, we had a Jon sort of burning Ygritte. Could have been one. Daenerys chaining up the dragons could have ended the season.
Children of the Forest. Yeah.
Children of the Forest.
Cliffhanger of them kind of. Yeah, oh, God, yeah.
I thought it was so good. And it didn't feel, you know, it didn't feel like that much like, oh, let's just check in with everyone once. There were things that I thought were a little like, oh, I didn't really need to see that. However, I just felt like it was really satisfying and I forgot how good it was.
Yeah,
so
I had
it's been really interesting and I'm really glad we did 4 this season because it's been a real.
I'd hate to have missed this.
It's a real season of climaxes. Lots and lots and lots and lots of things.
So it did what it did so well. I thought was that it had lots, like you say, lots of final moments. Things happened, but there were almost as many teasers ahead at the same time. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like for every for every Tywin death, there was the three-eyed raven. There was. What's Qyburn doing with the mountain? Loads of stuff. Let's start from the beginning, shall we? Should we go back? I do love a pickup straight after. So the opening scene was straight after saw John. Literally, it could have been a complete continuation. Was this the first time we'd seen Mance Rayder? I can't remember.
It's the first time.
It was the first time we met him, wasn't it? And why do all characters, when they're introduced, just look so clean and neat and tidy compared to where they end up? Do you know what I mean? Mance's hair looks brushed. You know what I mean?
I was wondering what he was doing in last week's episode. It was just nourishing his hair, you know.
Yeah, just a bit
doing
of
a
Moroccan oil.
I did think we sort of talked about this last week. I don't like the way that they didn't resolve the stuff north of the wall last week, but clearly they couldn't have fitted it all in. I think Mance Rayder is a really interesting character, and I think what's been really interesting with this episode is there's a lot of older generations either dying or losing their authority, and it's the children literally moving forward. And so Mance has been kidnapped, like, that was sort of, he was a bit of a surrogate father figure for John, or sort of like a male figure for him to like consider, like, because he's very noble, he doesn't kneel, very principled. He believes that, like, they've got a right to come south and they just want to hide. He had a great speech to John where he's like,
yeah, it was brilliant.
We're not conquering. We are fleeing the thing that is also coming for you. We want to hide behind the wall. It's not hard.
It's very difficult to argue against that, really, isn't it?
I think
you know,
so.
If you're in the Night's Watch to protect all men, it's kind of like, well, yeah, fair enough. You know, who are we to let you die?
I know. And there's just these baked prejudices into. They're like, well, we've never let you in, so why would we start now?
No, it was a great speech. I love that. Of all the ways I'd kill you, poison would be the last.
And we've had that a few times this season, right? Who would poison someone? And even with the mountain being poisoned, it was like, oh, those Martells, how dare they? But he lets John in. They have a drink. I don't know if there was any bread and salt because that's a Westeros thing, but very similar to the Red Wedding, right? When you let someone in, you don't betray them. You don't harm them. And he's very principled. He was like, that's not what it's for. But he said, like, oh, that giant, that random giant you killed, like, he was like the head of a big tribe of giants. You've wiped that family.
The end of a bloodline of 1,000 generations or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's brutal. And the Stannis moment. Now, I would say at the time, I was like, this is massive. This is huge. Watching it this week, I feel like they sort of, it didn't do anything for me. It felt so
random.
Well,
we know it doesn't go anywhere. That's why. I think
that's a big problem with this episode anything, is there are some things, and I think the same with all of the Daenerys stuff. It's like, God, we know those dragons are going to come out of the cave in about 7 episodes time.
Yeah, so, it's difficult to feel sorry for that dreadful acting that she did.
Also, Stannis, I was like, I love that you've brought 7,000 people and 7,000 horses. I think you could have done it with half that.
Yeah.
There was millions of them.
There were tons of them. It was. Do you know what that scene reminded me of? The opening scenes of Gladiator. Do you remember the great scenes shot just around the corner from my house, actually?
No way.
I was out in the forest with just loved that because it just looked cold and foggy and not how you imagined Roman war to be.
Yeah.
I loved it. But he had some good Imperial kind of almost Darth Vader theme tune as well, Stannis did when he invaded. Is that a motif? I'm so bad at recognizing motifs in music. You know, people that are like, oh my God, I think Star Wars is a great example of that. When people are like, oh my God, I heard Ray's theme twinkle in the background. That was a clue to blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, I don't think it's the music.
It requires a level of extracurricular interest that even we don't possess. But I love
you're
that.
You're good at it. You recognize like Reigns of Castamere.
I did.
Up
yeah.
Everywhere. I'm just
yeah,
like,
I did.
Oh, fucking hell. I didn't even hear that.
I think
too busy listening to them talking.
I think there is one. At the end of the episode, they do a choral version of the theme tune.
Yes. I've written down, I love it when Game of Thrones do like an EastEnders ending. You know, like when EastEnders has a major episode like Ethel dying or something like that.
Yeah.
You hear the piano starting in the background.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought that was amazing. That was really good. But yeah, the Stannis thing just didn't... I thought it was more impressive than it was. And when I saw it, I thought, God, we've only been watching this for 5 minutes and he's already... I think in the show, it's supposed to be like, oh my God, John is saved. He's been saved. But it's really underplayed. Like Stannis has come all this way with all these horses on all these boats. And it's sort of done as like, oh, Stannis is here.
Yeah.
It really lost it for me. I wonder if it's just because we haven't really seen every episode and it's not built to it. But
I'd forgotten why he was there anyway, apart from just to kind of like, just was he trying to make him make... The free folk bow to him and then join his army? Or
Melisandre basically said to him, the real fight is between the living and the dead. And so Stannis' logic is, I can't conquer the Seven Kingdoms if half of it is zombified. So he goes up there to try and like win them to his cause. And so obviously next season, he then realizes that he needs to take the North back. And that is what's going to buy him his kind of claim. I mean, I really like Stannis. He's a good character.
He is a good character.
I think they don't do enough in this episode to really sell what he's doing. And this sort of the difficulty, because Davos is like, he is the king. You should kneel. You should call him your grace at this. But first of all, the Night's Watch don't really follow, that they are out of the drama. They're like,
yeah, they're Switzerland. I'm not getting involved. They're just, yeah, yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
The other thing is, you're like, but you're not actually the king. You can say you've got the best claim, but like, you are not yeah. currently the king. So why do I have yeah, to? Yeah. And it's the inter-political things in this sort of scenario of Stannis being there and throwing his weight around. I feel like they didn't really get into, and I think they do next season because...
Well, there's a line, wasn't there, from Mance where he just said, well, I'm not in the Seven Kingdoms and you're not dressed for this weather.
Yeah, you know, love it's that.
Really, really good line. And but yeah, he did seem kind of like hugely underprepared, didn't he?
Yeah, but it must have taken ages to yeah. get all that way.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I it's really interesting. I love the stuff next season with Stannis and Jon. Very interesting where he tries to... Go on.
Question. How did Stannis get there?
They
did
sailed.
They sailed around.
Right. So, you know, kind of, they would have kind of yeah. come, I think I'm right in saying, when they go
by
to Hardhome.
Kind of way.
Kind of that way. Yeah. There's a tower yeah. on, you know, there's a few towers, there's a few castles.
Yes.
So gone there.
Okay. Yeah. And then we move to another weirdly, I guess, like it felt like quite a minor, just a weird moment, really. The whole thing with the mountain in lying on his supposed deathbed with the creepy, with the kind of almost glutinous kind of blood being venomous, kind of poison blood being sucked out of him. But I remember watching it and obviously knowing what we know. Why do you think that scene exists? Is that just to kind of start creating Cersei's clique? So, you know, yeah. you've got the mountain, got Qyburn and her kind of like forging a little group. That's what that's got to be about, right?
Yeah, and you know, displacing Pycelle and getting yeah. Qyburn in. It's a very like new era. I didn't think that scene needed to be in. I think that the mountain being kind of resurrected would have been more powerful if he kind of came out of nowhere and you've got this 8-foot yeah. monster and she's like... And you go, oh, that's weird. I think the problem with it is they've gone, let's try and like walk people through what's going on. But the thing that's yeah. going on is he's been brought back to life, which
yeah.
bear in mind, this is a universe in which they don't even have like, if you have a painkiller, it'll kill you. Literally, if you yes. have too much of it. Yeah. It's so, I kind of find it a little annoying how they're like, oh yeah, we sort of have the technology to keep him alive.
Yeah, but, he just immediately started doing a blood transfusion, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, but then we're like, but you know, but like, we haven't got that many wheels or we haven't got like hot water.
But also like, there's this, there is this weird kind of disconnect in Westeros, isn't there, between kind of believers in magic and not, you know, on one, like you say, on one hand, the science is pretty rudimentary there. There's milk of the poppy and nightshade and this and that and whatnot. But then it's just accepted. Like, as we know with Jon a bit later on and with the mountain, it's right. You can just bring him back to life. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
no one really goes, hold on a sec, what the fuck? It's just
yeah,
it's very strange.
Sort of weird where they diverge from, you know, I mean, the basic hygiene there. If you get a cut, you know, Robert Baratheon like died from falling off a horse and getting yeah. an infection.
Yeah, I find it quite difficult to imagine the sanitation in Westeros.
And also, but then Jamie had his hand chopped off, not even removed with any sort of like degree of
yeah.
like discretion.
And literally,
and
rubbed
he's fine.
In horse shit. Yeah,
rubbed in horse shit, pissed
on. Rubbed and in horse shit. Pissed
he's like yeah, never exactly. looked better. And you
it
know,
great.
I thought that was unnecessary. That episode, that scene, and yeah, but
I but there we
it's, are. There we are. And then...
But yeah, I agree that a big mountain reveal would have been good. Because if I remember rightly, they don't half tease the mountain being this monster for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
I think it went on for ages.
Next season, he's...
When does... I think he's just in hiding with Qyburn.
Oh,
I think he's being experimented on with Qyburn.
Yes, it's after
yeah,
her
exactly.
walk
he,
of shame.
He picks her up. He's yeah. there to... Yeah, that is it, yeah. And then we have, I guess, the third wheel in however many wheels that are going on, which is this we see Cersei's growth into, I guess, her imperial phase. Really, is what she's leaning towards.
Yeah.
She talks to Tywin in that fucking great scene. What a brilliantly scripted scene.
Yes.
Between Cersei and Tywin where she reveals or kind of at least picks the scab off Tywin to tell her that the rumours about her and Jaime are true. Just such a... her protection, her need for... I feel quite sorry for Cersei quite often in Game of Thrones. She does become an absolute monster and lunatic, but she's always just been there for her kids. She just bloody loves her kids. Always, that's what it's always been about. And as she says to Tywin, Joffrey's dead. You've just traded Marcella. Just traded her off, you know, as a kind of political puzzle.
Yeah.
And now Tommen is going to be king, and like she said, exactly the same thing will happen to him, because that's just what happens to kings and queens in Westeros.
Exactly.
And just trying to make Tywin see what he's actually doing to the families. He said he's doing it for Lannisters, and in reality, all he's doing is destroying Lannisters. He's just doing it for himself.
Yeah. It's kind of great seeing someone like her be undone by the system. It's like, oh, you are so far you've been such a like a boss, and it's like, no, you can still be sent to Highgarden and married off. Like, your only role to your father is to like put up and shut up. And I think I kind of would love to have seen what would happen if her and Loras got married. It would have been funny, but we'll never see that. But it was great watching her kind of come out as a twincest aficionado.
Yeah.
To sort of...
Well, she was all for it. Yeah.
Yeah, but because she's... That's the only way she can kind of destroy her father is by destroying his reputation. And she all but... And she kind of fucks it. You know, she's kind of ruined herself in his eyes, right?
Yeah.
Never... She's not trying to be 100%. Like... 100%. And it's really good. It's amazing to sort of do that for what you believe in, which is to try and stop this marriage. So I thought that was great. And that is mostly made up for the show as well. That scene doesn't exist in the book.
Oh, really?
I loved it. They don't really address the incest as much.
And was that, do you think that was clearly to, because we need to be thinking about Tywin more, because otherwise without that scene, Tywin would have just appeared on the shitter and got shot. That was it.
I think it's to sort of set him up as more of a villain as well. To kind of...
As to why he's hated by all of his children, really.
And to have
Jamie, poor old Jamie, shat his pants, didn't he? It's like, what, you told him? What did he say?
Like, I know, and she was like, good news, I told our dad that we're fucking, and he's like, what? I didn't tell you to do that.
But hang on a minute, I've got an erection.
Yeah. Dad knows we're sleeping together. He's like, why would you tell him that? I thought it was hilarious. All the Lannister stuff in this episode is really great. I mean, Tyrion has mostly been kept off the side. We haven't seen him a lot. But most of this season, he is in jail or in court or whatever. But that moment when him and Jaime have a hug and Jaime kisses him on the cheek, that was really, really touching, actually.
Yeah, they were great. They're a great pairing. Whenever they were together, you know, really good pairing. And actually, you know, probably... The only two Lannisters that really genuinely heartfeltly like each other, you know, and have love there.
It's really nice,
It is really good. Really good indeed. We did go over to see Danny. Bit of a duff moment. It's a sign of things to come, isn't it? I think we're heading into boring Danny season, aren't we?
It's just not interesting to watch. I mean, the main thing in this episode was that one of the slaves that she freed is having like an identity crisis now that he's not a slave, and he's asked to go back into being a slave, and she's like, she's kind of makes this loophole where she's like, well, if you want to do it, then that's okay. It's like, what?
Yeah, it becomes like a freelancer contract. You can do it, but only for a year. And then if you're still there for a year, it's a full-time employment and the tax will come after you.
Why a year? Like, of course, you know, as if he's going to go, I did it again and I didn't like it. Like, his whole thing is like, I understood the system and I don't
know. I knew where I stood, Yeah, and you know what? The two things that did happen do play a part in shaping... yeah. Danny to kind of, they've got to start kick, because they obviously have already planned where Danny's going to end up by now. So they have to start her downfall from being a righteous slave freer and an empire builder to being this megalomaniac crazy person.
I
guess, and I guess the two things that she has going for her in her life, in her mind, are the fact that she does good by freeing the slaves, tick, and that she is the mother of dragons, tick.
Yeah.
Now, and what we see in these kind of 2 or 3 minutes are the fact that both of those are in peril. You know, the slaves aren't happy, and she can't control her dragons. So I get it. Daenerys is not a great crier. She doesn't show emotion very well.
No.
She looks slightly fake. She panto when she's angry, and the kind of like the look back down to the cellar at the dragons with moist eyes was just a bit, oh my God, that's awful.
Yeah, it's interesting in so much, as you said, like she's trying to be a humanitarian. She's tried being like a Targaryen and neither are sort of working. And I think it is interesting. I was watching it and I was thinking, oh, she's kind of the only virtuous ruler. Like, she's literally trying to be kind.
Yeah.
But it's not that interesting to watch her go.
Also,
okay,
it shows that ruling always has a grey area, doesn't it, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's where she kind of ends up. She realises she has to, like, kick some heads in order to get anywhere. But, it's just hard to watch and I'm not that interested in it. And you're right. This is the point with this storyline where we're like, oh, you're so far away. One of the things that is great about this episode is all these new combinations of characters. And she very, until Tyrion comes along at the end of next season, she's still just got the same old people. I know, I know.
Yeah. Hold that thought. Right. Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't skip past them because they pay our food bills.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so we left Danny with the charred remains of a 3-year-old girl and some teenage dragons really struggling with puberty. And there was... The burning pyre scene I thought was wonderful. I love that. You know, they do funerals really well in Game of Thrones. You know, whether it's the floating Viking funeral with the mist arrow, you know, and the pyre at the end of The Long Night, which I'm sure we'll cover, was just like extraordinary. Just seeing all of those guys on it, and this one was great. Although weird, nice little off the shoulder number for Egret. I thought it was nice. It's
very,
nice,
I thought, very nice stylish, very yeah. stylish funeral. I thought
his dresser, yeah, just like show a little bit really of skin love, not too much. Yeah.
Appreciated that because I forgot about that scene. So when we talked about last week, where I thought you're not ending Egret with like you know nothing, Jon Snow. It's yeah. nice that it came back to something a little bit. And there was a lot of references to her. Tormund sort of talked about her as well, you know.
Yes, there was, yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of like, okay, you've won, John, but like at what cost? And like, yeah. did you ever really love her and stuff like that? Yeah. I thought he gave her a good send-off. And I really just like the fact that John is sort of like, look, to Stannis, he's like, look, I don't... Do what you want, but you've got to burn the bodies. And he doesn't really explain why. And Stannis is like, oh, hang on, this is... foreboding.
This is weird.
So I thought the tie-off with Egret was really, really good. I thought that that did a good job. And I think the...
It showed a bit of his leadership skills where, you know, literally set her on fire, done, turned away, walked away. He was upset, but he was kind of like, you know, there was no kind of like... There's no... He knew he did what needed to be done. I'm sure he'd have rather buried her, you know.
Yes. And then lots of, again, that thing in the episode of lots of people turning back... Turning away from the past, moving forward. He's literally burnt that away now. Burnt That's over and moves forward. Let's talk about Brienne and the Hound, because that is...
Oh, we're jumping ahead. Okay, fine. Yeah,
oh, well, what's next?
We'll do Brienne and the Hound, because it's a great scene. And then we'll come on to my favourite bit.
Oh, I thought this would be your favourite bit.
Well, no, I did love this bit, but as I've always said, my favorite,
the brand stand is in the house. Okay, let's talk about
that Brienne and the Hound.
Okay, I fucking loved that whole thing because characters we've not really seen together. It starts off quite sort of congenial, like Arya and Brienne are talking about, oh, men don't let us train, but like we'll do it anyway. And then you realise, like, hang on, these guys, the Hound is not going to let Brienne get in the way. She's not going to let him take Arya. And you realise that there's some serious shit going down. It's very, like, WWE, I thought.
Yeah, because you know that they're both amazing warriors. It's just like, this is what we want. John Cena!
It was just like, you could almost hear, you know, in Kill Bill, when that sort of siren goes, you know, when she sort of sees one of the assassins. I thought it was amazing, the act,
the performances from Maisie and from Gwendolyn and what's the Hound's real name?
Rory,
were brilliant there. I love a penny drop moment. I love a penny drop moment. And when Brienne realizes who she is, who Arya is, it's just like, oh God, yes, shit gonna go down. It was amazing. It was so good.
And it's really funny because you watch it. I remember watching it thinking, again, like, it's not in... That scene is not in the books. They made that for the show.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it thinking, every possible outcome could happen. Like, Brienne could kill the Hound and her and Arya could go off on an adventure. The Hound could kill Brienne and cement this idea to Arya that, like, God, we have to do awful things, even kill that nice lady knight. Podrick could have died. Like, there was quite a lot of things. Yeah, so I was watching it thinking, I don't know where this is going. And I love...
But also, no one was really coming at it with bad intentions. The Hound wasn't like, no, I'm keeping it for myself, I'm going to get a ransom. Brienne wasn't kind of like... Both of them thought that they were in the right there, doing what was best for Arya. And actually, Arya just ended up going, excuse me, you two fucking idiots. I don't need either.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.
Love that she's finally realised. And again, we didn't see a lot of Arya and the Hound in our rewatch. We've just not seen them a great deal. But what we would have seen is just her constantly realising that, like, there's no one place where I'm going to be safe with anyone.
Yeah.
My parents can get killed. My aunt can fall through the door. Everything can get ruined. And so I really think this was a good way for her to... You know, Brienne is a really good person. We know that. But when you go through, she's like, I'm here to... Your mum sent me before she got killed by someone. And actually, I've also been sent by the guy that your family hate that killed your family. And I've got his sword. You're kind of like, yeah, I'm not going with you. Yeah. This is like creepy guy outside a primary school with sweets kind of guy.
Yeah,
like,
true. Yeah.
And you go,
she didn't sell it well. Yeah,
did a really bad job. And that is what's so great to watch, is that you're like, I know what the right outcome is for this character, and she's not doing it. It's really,
well, yet again, it's Arya being within a hair's breadth of safety. And her family, and kind of like, you know, a completely different path for her. It's being outside the Red Wedding. It's being at the Moon Door. It's missing John by, you know, it's all of those moments that were just kind
of
like,
if she'd taken her to the Eyrie, if Brienne had taken Arya to the Bloody Gate, she would have met Sansa.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a lot. And
then Littlefinger would have had, two Starks.
Exactly.
Oh my God, yeah.
So I love the fight. There is a lot of cuts, I thought, which makes me think.
Yeah, very. It's a bit Liam Neeson, wasn't it? It's a bit Liam Neeson jumping over the fence in Taken 2.
Yeah. But I loved how violent and physical it was. Lots of thick punches, lots of slaps, lots of people getting kicked in the crotch. Like,
well, they were both. Relentless. I think it's because they spent so long talking about the swords and how good they were, and this and that and the other. The swords actually didn't come into it. It just became about just a dirty bar fight.
Yeah,
it reminded me the cinematography of it reminded me a little bit of. Do you remember in the Lost finale or the Lost penultimate episode?
Yeah.
Where Jack's fighting the Man in Black on like the cliff edge.
In the mud, isn't it? In a muddy. Yeah.
And it reminded me a lot of that, like swooping over, kind of like.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of like aerial
shots.
It was
the shot where the Hound, we're above the Hound and we watch him tumble back off the cliff. That is a beautiful.
Yeah.
Shot of the camera work. It's just great because you actually don't realize there's a drop. You realise there's a drop when he realises there's a drop, which is when he's like 45 degrees over it. And it's really, really nice. But yeah, I mean, also just an outcome I didn't really, it's just an amazing end because he kind
it was
of
a great end, yeah.
doesn't really die. I mean,
we all know the rules in Game of Thrones. Unless you see someone die, with the exception of Stannis, the chances are they ain't dead. But it was a great moment again between Arya and the Hound, one of my favorite.
Oh my God, that scene is amazing because she says very, very little, and he is desperately trying to get her to mercy kill him, and I think it's what's just, so
amazing. He just decides about halfway through, doesn't he? He goes, fuck it, I'm ready, go on, here's the knife, go on, I'm ready. Just which you could have just stabbed yourself, to be honest.
I wondered why that didn't happen. Okay. Why he didn't just do that?
Could have. Did it need her to do it? But
don't you think also? My sort of reading was like he's trying to get Arya. He thinks he's on her list, so he's almost like giving her, like, I'm going to let you do it. I'm going to let you kill.
He was on a list. He is on a list.
Yeah, and he goes, I killed the butcher's boy, and she kind of has mercy. Or I kind of am interested to know what you thought about why she doesn't do it. Is it like because that's the biggest way she can have power over him is to not give him
what he wants? Well, I think she hasn't really turned into that Arya yet, the one that stabs Meryn Trant in the eyeballs, the one that I think she's not quite there yet. She's not become a Jedi. That's how I felt anyway. And actually, while she's got this pent up hatred and this, she's only ever really done dances with swords so far, you know, practicing, so to speak. And actually, she hasn't yet fully developed her assassin side yet, which obviously is where she's heading to Braavos.
And also, I think she's.
So that was my thought, really. And also, she probably just looked at him and just thought, it's going to be, I hate you that much. I'm not going to give you the pleasure of me ending your life painlessly. I'm going to let you lie there with your thigh bone sticking out.
Yeah, I thought that as well. I thought there was a bit of like, if I was going to kill you, it's because it's my idea, but now you want me to do it. It's not a revenge list. It's more like a chore list if I'm having to, if you're like asking me to do it.
That's the honourable friend thing to do, and I'm not your friend. Yeah.
And I think also, she sort of realises that the sort of semantics of this list are quite complicated because she's like, you did a bad thing, so you're on the list, but I've seen with you on this journey, everyone's morally compromised. Everyone is doing morally bad things. And I've grown to like you, and you have protected me really well. So does that mean I'm still on the list? Like, I don't really understand. But I thought the way that there's a bit that's really awful, which I forgot, where he even sort of implies like he would have raped Sansa.
I'd have raped Sansa, yeah. It's really grim.
He's really trying to push her buttons.
He's lashing out, yeah. He's just trying to... He's just clutching at straws because he just...
I loved it. She does. Maisie Williams says so little, but she does so much acting with that. And yeah. I thought it was so amazing. I also think, yeah, that she's kind of... There's a lot with when she goes to the House of Black and White to train. It's like you've got to leave all your identity. You've got to be no one. And I wondered if there was a bit of that being sort of foretold where she's sort of
building
like,
up her baggage. Yeah.
I've got to let go. I've got to move forward. And then the Braavos coin that she got given in season two, that paid off by the time she got to the docks.
Bit of a Sinbad moment. That was one. Oh, Madar, Valadares. You have the magic. You have the magic coin. Yeah. It was a bit kind of like, "Who are you, wizened old hag with the magic coin?"
I'm the one person you needed to see, and you found me. It's like what?
No one else would have a clue what that was. Yeah,
he's like, "That's not a real coin." But obviously, with the coin and the Valar Morghulis.
Yeah,
he thinks she's an assassin. She is one of the guilds. One of the assassins.
So he's terrified.
He's like,
shit. Yeah, he's like, holy shit. Yeah, exactly.
So I love that, and the scene on the boat is just. They don't do those sorts of things often on Game of Thrones. These like cinematic, or I don't think they had done them much at that point. It's beautiful.
Did it mirror? I can't remember off the top of my head. Did that scene mirror Arya's final scene in Game of Thrones? I think it did, didn't it? Didn't she?
I think there is something. Yes, yeah. Off to a new adventure. Let's talk about the Bran stuff.
Long-time listeners of the podcast will know that the Bran storyline is my favourite storyline. I just, I don't know why, because it's pretty thin. I think I just like that kind of genre. There's lots in this scene. So this is the moment where all of a sudden they just arrive at the weirwood, this beautiful kind of like huge kind of weirwood that he's been having visions of since the very first episode, since the pilot episode of Game of Thrones. This has been his quest. This has been his destiny. And I think I like it so much because there's a bit of resolution there. There's a bit of we've reached it. It's almost like when you're playing a game, you have to reach the thing. So it's almost like a save. So if you die now, you only revert back to there. You're not going to go all the way back to the beginning. It feels a little bit like that. Then obviously there's a massive tribute to Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah.
With the skull fight, the skeleton fight. And what was the guy? Oh, shit. What was the guy's name? Harryhausen, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Very famous visual effects guy who invented that kind of stop motion thing, which is this is obviously a huge homage to. Loved all that. Weird that they came out in the day. They were just... It's not really explained why they're there under the ice. I think we just have to assume that they want to stop anybody getting to the Three-Eyed Raven in any way possible.
Yeah. It's weird because they don't normally come out of the ground, do they? It's not...
No, exactly. And it was a very weirdly edited scene, the fight thing. I think similar to the fight with the Hound and Brienne as well, very fast cut. I'm not sure who was directing this episode. Maybe that's one of their visual kind of like calling cards.
Yeah, I don't know. Motifs.
But we're introduced to the Children of the Forest as well,
who
can throw fireballs.
That I just find like you guys have been able to do this all this time and you've not killed any White Walkers.
The Children of the Forest are intriguing, and the thing that we only see them maybe two, maybe three times in the whole of Game of Thrones, don't we? We see a flashback to when they created the Night King, I think.
Yeah.
That might be it. And maybe we see them. Maybe we see them in the Hold the Door episode as well.
Yeah, they're in Hold the Door because they sort of live under the tree, I guess.
Now, the Children of the Forest, to those of you that follow, we're going to be the subject of the first spin-off of Game of Thrones, which never ended up happening. I think it was called Red Moon. Was it called Red Moon?
Yeah, that was the code name, I think.
Yeah, never made it past the pilot stage for various reasons. But Children of the Forest was seen as the kind of pinnacle of the framework of that, and I can kind of guess I get why, because they are kind of intriguing. They're kind of like these weird like pixie Lord of the Rings kind of characters. Now they're there to protect the Three-Eyed Raven, I don't understand the dynamic between the Three-Eyed Raven, because if they were the first people there, then the Three-Eyed Raven must have come into being. Is that explaining the books where the Three-Eyed Raven came from?
The Three-Eyed Raven, yes. The Three-Eyed Raven was an ordinary person that had the abilities that Bran has. And I think his name was Brendan Rivers, so he was like a bastard. I can't remember quite the story, because I think they do change it as well for the show. But yeah, he had the same gift, and it's he's been there for.
But what's the dynamic between him and the Children of the Forest in the books? Is that explained?
I can't remember. But what I do know, the Children of the Forest were like the original inhabitants of Westeros, and the more that they cut down the woods and stuff, they had fewer and fewer places to go. And as we find out in the show, they sort of created the White Walkers to, like, fight humans, and then it got out of hand. But I think because the Three-Eyed Raven is, like, works with the Weirwood Trees, they're sort of like, hey, you're a good guy, and we're going to
protect you. So it's like a bit of a mutual thing. Okay, get it. Whoever the fellow was that played the Three-Eyed Raven in this was recast, I think, for the next season.
Max von Sydow is in it.
Great actor. Fucking great actor. I mean, I can see why they cast him. That is great. I think when this scene first aired, this was one of my, because I was doing Thronecast, all of the skeletons were post-it notes. The fireballs were just kind of like ping pong balls, kind of like stop motion across. I didn't really see any of that. But it was a bit of a letdown. I do love the scene, but the whole "but you shall fly," which was used in the trailers and was just such a tantalizing cliffhanger to leave Bran on, never really materialized, did it? Because it was kind of like it ended up being that he was just going to be warging a bit. That was
It's a line from the book, so I thought it was great that they kept that in. But I think they don't really. I am with you, though. I love all of this Bran stuff. But I think the problem, and this is one of the biggest casualties of the fact the show can't give away more than is on the page. And even on the page, it's very, like, it's very slow and it's very careful. And I think I would love to see more of the stuff in the tree, under the tree, with him walking and getting more of that. But actually, I think when we'll get to season 6, we'll find this out again. It's that, like, it's actually all over before it's even begun. Hold the Door is like episode 4 of season 6 or something, maybe episode 5. We don't get enough of it. And I think, I love it all, but I think it's very frustrating to get to him and then him telling us something that we don't really understand at this point.
Yeah. Because it's like the magician is the magician's nephew, really, isn't he? Or the source, whatever that fable is. And I like to get in the weeds of it and see how he's learning and what he's learning things for and what are the skills that he's got.
That is the thing that is most frustrating, is that we don't really get to the why are you doing this? And I wish.
Don't even start me off on the Long Night. Fucking hell. What are you doing, mate?
Yeah. But it's like, I wish there was a bit more. It's really important you begin your training because.
Then
we find out. But in the end, even in the final season, Bran is like, he's coming to kill me because I can see everything. He wants to wipe out everyone's memories. And I was like, is that what this is about? Like, is that what this...
Is that the whole reason? Yeah.
He just wants to delete Wikipedia, essentially, right? Yeah. I'm like, is that what this is about? Like, because there'll be other, you know, in theory anyway.
Well, there was Jojen. Yeah, and why was Jojen any different to Bran? That's what I want to know.
He can't warg, but he can see things, but he's not, I don't think he's anywhere near. Again, Jojen and Meera, it's like the show doesn't really know, it doesn't really know why they're there, what they know. So it's sort of like Jojen, they just kill off to have a bit of drama.
Yeah,
still alive in the books, but there's a theory that he's been made into. Bran has to eat this paste made out of weirwood seeds to help his abilities grow, and there's a very popular fan theory that Jojen in the book has been killed off screen and has been turned into the paste, because they live like under the trees. It's like really really far down, and there's caves and stuff. And they all, like, get really weird because they haven't been outside for, like, a long time. And they're all, like, Jojen and Meera are all just a bit kind of, like, they all go a bit crazy. It's really interesting, that stuff in the books. I'm really looking forward to...
That's kind of interesting.
It is. It's really
Don't say you're really looking forward to seeing what happens. Like you're going to fucking find out what happens. Those books are never getting written.
I was going to say, book six, I'm really looking forward to it. When is it going to
happen? Never going to happen. Never going to see it. Never going to see it.
Yeah. I tell you what I really liked, though, is there were some nice shots in that scene where Bran walks into Hodor.
Yes.
And, like, Bran is, like, eyes glazed over. There's two skeletons coming up behind him. There were some really, really nice shots, but...
And Hodor puts his fingers up one of the skeleton's nose.
I know.
Does a flip. Yeah, he turns into, like you say, WWE again.
It's WWE references here. Yeah, yeah.
He takes hold of the controllers. And he's like...
Yeah, he's just smashing it. He's got all the power-ups. But, you know, good sort of... Good to get them finally up there. But I just would love him to... talk a bit more. I'd love Bran to just be like, oh,
it only gets worse, doesn't it? Because he just starts speaking in weird wizard code from now on, doesn't he? Really? Once he gets out of there, he's all kind of like, especially, I do like the moments where Sansa and Arya kind of meet up with him again. They're a bit like, fuck it, oh, you've weirded out, mate.
Yeah. Our brother's gone on a gap.
You've been listening to My Chemical Romance. Yeah, exactly.
But what they do in season 7 is like, someone will say something, they'll go, wow, I haven't been to Harrenhal for years, and he'll just idle into the frame and go, you were there last week. He's just dobbing on people. You know, he goes, oh, can't wait to see my betrothed. You've been having an affair with your secretary for 3 months. Yeah. Like, Bran, who let you in?
What feels like the finale, really, is Tywin and Tyrion's...
oh, my gosh, yeah.
Kind of meeting up... question for you. Tyrion is shown the route of his escape towards Varys and the crate, imp crate, by Jaime. He makes a decision not to go and instead heads to Tywin's bedroom where he sees Shay. And it's there that his anger, he realises that Tywin and Shay have been banging away. Not only that, but she calls Tywin her lion as well.
Yeah.
And that is what tips him over the edge, grabs the crossbow, does his dad in.
Yeah.
What was he going to the bedroom for in the first place?
So, I thought actually what I understood about this scene before I rewatched it is different. So my understanding was he goes through this, Varys, he breaks out of his cell. Mm-hmm. Jaime shows him this secret passageway. And he goes down,
which has got to be the same passage.
It's got to be the same one from House of the Dragon. It's got to be. So he's supposed to go down, and then that's how he'll get to the docks. He realizes he's in the Tower of the King, so he goes up to sort of confront his dad to say, "How could you sentence me to death?" Yeah. But again, I don't want to be too. I know I truly try not to go on about the books, but there's stuff. I thought. I loved all of this, but it for me lacks a little bit of context as to like why he would want to kill his dad. So
we learned from this episode that it's because of Shay. So tell me what the book
well,
said.
So in the, we found this out in season one, that, Tyrion had this story where he like met this like whore and he fell in love with her, and his dad paid for like all of his soldiers to have a go on her as well, right? Do you remember they did this drinking game with Bronn?
Yeah.
Like in the book, Jaime sort of says, "Look, I've got a confession. Like that woman that your dad like never said it was never good enough for you. She actually wasn't a whore. Like so, it's sort of even worse, right? Like they just gang raped a random woman, and she was good enough for him. She was sort of." Not highborn, but she wasn't like a completely different class. So he realizes that this thing he's been told, which is that your dad didn't want you to have like go down the wrong path, is a lie. And this is his woman that he was in love with, and that's why he goes to kill his dad.
Right, okay.
And it's a bit more hellbent on revenge. And what I found with watching this the way it is on TV, it's all framed as a little bit more like even killing Shay is kind of like a bit of a I was defending myself and I just sort of had to kill you. Whereas in the book, it's like, it's really like revenge.
It's a
like,
bit more vengeful. Yeah.
And I sort of think the show is like, we don't want Tyrion to, he's the closest thing we have to a main character.
Exactly.
And
he's the audience.
Can't have him just murdering people. But I loved you know, the thing with Shay where he chokes her on his father's, like, big chain, like his pimp chain. The thing that's really great is that Dinklage collapses, and you don't realize till the camera moves, like her head, her upside down head. You don't really realize that she's dead until it pans across. So I thought that was really great, but he realizes he's been sold out, that she testified against him because his dad's been sleeping with her as well. So he goes up. That my understanding is that once he saw Shay and realized, that's why he goes up to kill his dad in the TV show. Yeah.
And the significance of the crossbow is that that's the crossbow that Joffrey killed Roz with.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think it must be, yeah. I think it must be. But also, it's just cool, right?
Like, what a way to go. Yeah, little mini crossbows.
Those bolts. I obviously don't handle many crossbows in my line of work, but those bolts are huge.
I wonder if my neighbour's got one like that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Great scene between that. The Charles Dance was exemplary in there. The snidey kind of like trying to second guess and trying to play against his, but you're a Lannister, you're my son, you've done so well. And Tyrion's just like, you'd send me to death, you fucking dick. It's like, forget all that, let's talk about it. It was just such a...
And also,
a
like, when he said, I would have never... let you get killed. He's like, why wouldn't you let me in on this? Like, why am I only just...
Why don't you just wink at me just once in either the trial or the trial by combat? Just look over and just go, I've got your back, son.
Yeah, just fix it. But I think that was what was so... I mean, I often think about this, like, was Tywin telling the truth? I'm not sure what he wanted, whether he believed Tyrion poisoned Joffrey. I don't think he did.
Yeah,
I
it's find a weird
the
one,
charade because with the trial. I'm like, what? Why do it all?
The fact that Tyrion is, you know, in Game of Thrones speak, an imp, you know, seems to be the only reason that Tywin didn't like him, because actually, he was fucking great. He was a great ally to Tywin. In terms of how to handle the crown, the purse, politically, you know, he knew a lot of things. He could influence a lot of things. He was a good thinker. So actually, you know, compared to Jaime and Cersei, he was the best that he got. It can't all have been about physical prejudice, surely.
Yeah. He like, you know, he needs... Jaime can't have kids because he's on the Kingsguard. Cersei is probably not able to have more. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, oh no, I guess she is because she does get pregnant. But like... Yeah. You know, Tyrion's the one that can produce more, like, Lannisters, essentially, right? Because, like, she's...
But I guess the danger is there, is the hereditary thing. But does he blame him for his wife's death?
I think he does. And I think also Tyrion is the hardest one to control.
Yeah.
Jaime, he puts him on the, you know, basically a glorified policeman, can't inherit land, can't marry, and he's sort of like... you know, easy to work with. Cersei, too busy with the kids, kind of always did what she was told. Tyrion is the one that is probably, like, I mean, he's incredibly smart, and I think that's probably something that's, it makes him hard to manage.
Yeah.
But it's, I also thought, this is an interesting thing, like, it's the first time we've really seen Tywin not in, like, regal clothes or armour or anything. He's just in, like, an undershirt.
Literally just on the bog.
And it's so exposed, it's so exposing. And I just really clever, and it just what a way to go. I mean, I think it's so great that he has such a shit way of dying, like just getting shot on the toilet.
Yeah.
And I also just love on a thematic, you know, the whole thing goes to shit when Tywin's not running things anymore. Like, it's really chaotic from here on out. And it's this all the stuff with the sparrows coming in, it is all because of the power vacuum left behind. Because no one's there to keep Cersei in check. And then, Tyrion goes right back down after shooting his dad, gets in the crate, off to Pentos.
And that, my friends, is season 4 of Game of Thrones, done and dusted. Thoroughly enjoyed all 4 of these
amazing
episodes.
Amazing really season. Good. I really forgot how good it was.
Is it the best season for you?
I think as a season, I think it's the most cohesive. I think it's the most consistent. Yeah, I think it is. So I was shocked about season 3. I was shocked how like it felt like, oh my God, they're just waiting for the Red Wedding. This was a really like fast-paced, really satisfying.
Yeah.
And I think it's the series where they do play around with the source material and it mostly works. I think from here on out, this is where it starts to...
Okay.
Anyway, so we've got season five. We're starting season five.
It's on its way. So we'll put up the episodes as we always do on our Twitter account at dragoncast_pod. All you got to do is like your three at a max, your three favorite episodes. Just pick your three least favourite episodes. Your least worst episodes, I should say. So we've got, looking through them, we had The Wars to Come, which is the flashback Cersei has, and Mance meets his grisly end. Then we're in the House of Black and White, which is where Arya arrives in Braavos. It's where Jon is voted as Thingamajigger, the Night's Watch. Then we got High Sparrow, where we meet the High Sparrow and head into that kind of storyline. Then we have Sons of the Harpy, my least favorite baddies in the whole world of anything. Loras is arrested for homosexuality. Then we see the end of Barristan Stelmy, which was one of the most controversial killings in the whole of the TV series. Then we've got Unbowed, Unbent and Broken, which is the really grim Sansa one, which we would rather not do if at all possible. Please, thank you very much.
Yeah.
We've got The Gift, which is directed by Miguel Sapochnik, who you might know, which is kind of like a political one where High Sparrow arrests Cersei and all of that kind of stuff. Then we've got Hard Home. Then we've got Dance of the Dragons, which is the
one with the fighting pits where Drogon sort of comes back. And
Dude,
I thought Hard Home was episode 9. I did not know it was an episode
8. No, Hard Home's episode 8. Dance of the Dragons is episode 9, which is where the dragon arrives and swoops Daenerys, which was exciting the first time. It's the first time we saw Daenerys on the back of a dragon. So that was
true.
Big moment. And then 10, season finale is Mother's Mercy, which is Selyse, distraught over Shireen's death. It's the grim opener. Oh, God, we've got Shireen's death as well.
What episode is that?
That happens in, oh, my goodness.
It must be episode 9. Yes, it is, because... she talks about the Dance of Dragons in this episode. She talks about Rhaenyra and she talks about Aegon the Second.
Oh God! Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So there's some House of the Dragon stuff in that episode, which will be quite interesting.
Oh great! Okay, cool. And then so Selyse.
Funny Selyse season, isn't bullet. It?
Yeah, it season. Is. Qyburn. It's the shame moment.
Oh my God, is that the final episode?
Episode 10 is Shame, yeah.
Hannah Waddingham from Ted Lasso as the nun.
Our friend Hannah, I wonder if I might drop Hannah a line, see if she fancies coming
on. Should. I interviewed her last year.
Hannah's so good. She's such
for an American magazine.
I've never been so happy to see someone get such success from Ted Lasso because, you know, she was great in Game of Thrones. It was a real career moment for her and, you know, I'm sure she didn't struggle, but she, you know, it took a while for her to get another decent TV gig. Yeah. You know, she's very famous in theatre land. I'm really pleased with her. But yeah, we end. So episode 10 is great. Actually, we've got Shame, and then we've also got John not being very well.
Of course, yeah. I've been looking through the list of episodes and sort of as you've been sort of talking through them. It's a lot of episodes where I'm like, this just all feels like moving pieces around.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of intrigued. I'm actually not going to offer any here's what I'd like to watch. I just want people to
But we've already said we'd rather not discuss the Ramsay raping sound.
I'd rather not watch Unbowed and Unbroken, definitely. It's just also like, you know, even it's not, part is watching it. I don't really want to watch it. Secondly, I think in terms of, we know what we're going to say about it. We know how we feel about it. We've talked about it a few times.
Yeah.
Just feels like a sort of
and also it's quite
era.
Sand snake heavy. No one needs that in their life.
So I'm very intrigued to see what people vote for. In my head, there's definitely a couple of episodes I'd like to see, but I feel like I'm going in a little bit less granular with like what I know about it all. I feel like a bit like, okay, let's just see.
Cool. Fab. Okay, well, those will go up on the Twitter account shortly. The OA episode, we're into part two of the OA. That will be with you later on in the week. Have we? We've had a lot of comments on YouTube about the OA. Not so many about House of the Dragon, actually, this week. We've had lots of people. We've had quite a lot of newcomers to Dragon, to House of the Dragon, but not to Game of Thrones. Have we had any mention of anything? Season 4, episode 2. No, we're not adding any comments. Do get us in touch. Do get in touch with us at dragoncast_pod or on the YouTube channel, which is dragoncastpod, and leave some comments. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think. We are always, always pleased to hear from you. Until the OA part two, and until next week, where we'll be discussing whatever the first episode you guys choose from season 5 of Game of Thrones, Dracarys.
Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at dragoncast_pod or email dragoncast@daffdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Dragoncast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daff Doris production. Dracarys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.